Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Congratulations on getting through 9-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me, it is our producer extraordinaire, Brandon Kiley. Coming up in about 40 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. We'll also play some of what Therese Paylor had to say, who joined us earlier today. The Chiefs made some salary cap moves. We are no closer to finding out the health of Tyreek Hill. And week one is officially in the books in the NFL. That sounds like the hits, BK.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Go. Hits are brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city. Now open in the Crossroads and the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. So the big hit of the day is what Deshaun Watson looked like last night in a losing effort against the Saints. Now, he didn't have a losing effort. His defense did, though. Watson now has 56 total touchdowns in 24 career regular season games. C-Dot, that is third all-time through 24 games. Kurt Warner, Dan Marino, the only quarterbacks in NFL history with more total touchdowns through their first 24 games than Watson. C-Dot, is it time that we officially put Deshaun Watson into the elite quarterback category along with Patrick Mahomes?
We will get more into this coming up after the hits, but I thought Deshaun Watson was absolutely special yesterday. It's one of the reasons why I hate quarterback win losses. Deshaun Watson did what you're supposed to do. He left the field and his team had a lead and his defense had to get a stop to preserve the win, and they didn't do so. That's not on Deshaun Watson. That's on the Texans defense, Bill O'Brien and Romeo Crennel. When it comes to Deshaun Watson, I don't know if he's a top 10 quarterback right now, but I feel very comfortable saying that he's going to be a top 10 quarterback at the end of the season. He made two elite level throws. The pass to DeAndre Hopkins on the left sideline at the end of the game, and then the touchdown pass to Kenny Stills were incredible throws. It's just unfortunate the lack of resources, especially on the offensive line, they put around Deshaun Watson.
He's absolutely a top 10 quarterback right now. He was great last night with three touchdown passes. I think part of his success is the situation that he's put in. Now, he's got offensive weapons when you talk about a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, but Bill O'Brien is his head coach, and he plays with maybe the worst offensive line in the NFL. He got sack counted not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six times yesterday. If he was put in a different situation, I don't know what's called the situation Patrick Mahomes is in with all the offensive weapons, Andy Reid, and a fine offensive line, he might be even better. And I think right now we're talking about the best two young quarterbacks in the entire NFL. If you made me start a franchise, I'd pick Pat 1. I'd take Deshaun Watson 2. It's crazy to think that the Bears had their choice a couple of years ago. Do we want Deshaun Watson? Do we want Patrick Mahomes? And they decided to take neither with the number 2 overall pick and went with Mitchell Trubisky. Ouch.
Two.
Hit number 2, it seems like Brett Veach is up to something right now. The Chiefs moved some money around. They moved base salary into signing bonuses for Anthony Hitchens and Eric Fisher's contracts. It opened up more than $10 million in cap space. The details also out today on Tyreek Hill's new contract. He's only going to count against the cap for $2 million this year. So, all told, Arrowhead Pride says that the Chiefs now have $23 million to spend in cap space for this year. See, now they opened up that money for something. What do you think Brett Veach is up to right now?
I think this is much more of an October 30th move than a September 10th kind of move. October 30th is the NFL trade deadline. I don't think there's going to be a lot of rapid change in movement in the NFL because it's 1 week. No team is giving up this early I don't care how bad they are, like the Miami Dolphins. So I think this is a move to prepare themselves for the trade deadline. Look at what happened last year. Playoff teams were active at the deadline. The Chiefs are going to make a move. They're just not making a move this month. We know what the plan is at corner. Unless an injury happens, we know who the three cornerbacks are, and Tyrann Mathieu is your fourth. That's their plan.
Hang on, BK. They did a what? A base salary to signing bonus conversion? That sounds a little Enron-ish. Sounds a little Ponzi scheme-ish to me. But I'm no expert on the salary cap like you are. The Chiefs have enough money now if a player comes along. I was going to say that guy who plays for the Arizona Cardinals in the secondary, but we're not supposed to mention his name. If a player like that becomes available, the Chiefs are in a position to go out there and snag him. I wonder if more directly, now they created some money, if Chris Jones is going to see any of that bread the same way that Tyreek Hill got paid last week.
Three. Final hit of the day is brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city, now open in the Crossroads and the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. The final hit is the other Monday night football game. The Raiders looked good last night. They looked like a team that was taking out all of its frustrations from the Antonio Brown saga. And Derek Carr was balling out. He finished 22 of 26, 260 yards, touchdown, and a 121 quarterback rating. C-Dot, are you adjusting your expectations at all for the Raiders or the Broncos after what we saw last night in a battle of AFC West post?
Let's slow down a little bit on the Oakland Raiders. I will say, they came out with a different focus and they appeared to rally around not having Antonio Brown, that I was a little bit surprised. The Raiders that I grew up to know and love would have absolutely fallen apart and got smoked at home yesterday. They would have been booed off the field, and we would have been making fun of the Oakland Raiders for a full 4 hours today. They played really well. They came out energized. They came out fired, inspired behind their coach, and Derek Carr led them to a win. That's different than what I've seen for the Raiders. I do want to keep in mind they were playing the Broncos, and Joe Flacco is absolutely trash. He stinks. But you went out, you're 1-0 against a team in your division. You got a chance to shock the world and pull off the upset against the Kansas City Chiefs. Oakland surprised me a little bit yesterday.
Being a Raiders fan must suck, even though you're 1-0 right now. But think about it. Antonio Brown is no longer on the team. Your expectations are to win maybe 6 or 7 games this year. And you're a lame duck fan base. You're moving to Las Vegas next season. That being said, the Raiders actually looked a little bit better than I thought they were going to. I think that says a lot more about Denver than it does Oakland. Denver's not a good football team. Denver might end up being like a 4 or 5 win team. As far as the line goes, because remember, this is the team the Chiefs play on Sunday. The Chiefs are an 8-point favorite. The over-under is 52. So points expected to be scored. After seeing Jacksonville in week one, and maybe I'm making a mountain out of a molehill here because it was just 1 week, I think Oakland might be a more difficult opponent in week two than Jacksonville was in week one. They look terrible.
I don't know if I'm at that point, but I get what you're saying. I thought Oakland was impressive. Like, I thought Oakland looked really good. I mean, Oakland played Denver and Jacksonville played the Chiefs, so that's probably a big difference on why we evaluate the two teams completely different. The Raiders didn't play a top three team in the NFL.
What did Jacksonville do good, though? Like, if you could point to something and say, well, at least Jacksonville did this, what would your answer be?
I don't think they did a whole lot well.
Yeah, the Chiefs dominated them everywhere, except for, I guess, the last few minutes, which none of us saw because CBS took the game off our TV.
Yeah, that was garbage time. I don't really care about the end of the game. And when it mattered, the Chiefs were pretty much in control of that game the entire time. Chiefs scored in their first 7 possessions.
Sounds like a man who didn't have any money on the over-unders.
It was not very close between those two teams. So yesterday, I'm watching Deshaun Watson, and I'll admit, yesterday was the first time that I was willing to at least entertain the possibility that Deshaun Watson is an elite-level quarterback in the NFL. My elite-level quarterbacks in the NFL has been pretty solidified since the end of the season. Patrick Mahomes is arguably the best quarterback in the NFL, but if you said you would take Brady over him based on the postseason, I won't fight you on that. Brady, I think, is elite. I think you still have to consider Drew Brees to be in that category. I think we saw yesterday, especially at the end of the game, I would put Ben Roethlisberger in that category. I'd also put Aaron Rodgers in that category. I think those are the elite-level quarterbacks in the NFL, and I'd probably put Russell Wilson in that list as well. Man, Deshaun Watson was incredible yesterday. That it got me thinking that sometimes I think we look at sports as so black and white that it always has to be a winner and a loser, when sometimes both people can win. I'm not talking about a tie here. Like, the Chiefs made the right decision at quarterback. To go draft Patrick Mahomes, his skill set, I think they made the right decision over Deshaun Watson. Drafting Deshaun Watson also wouldn't have been a very bad option. Like, those look like two of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, and given their age, man, they got a chance to go on a run here for the next 10 years where we get the best quarterbacks in the AFC going head-to-head against each other. The thing that would scare me against Houston and why I think you feel so good about the Kansas City Chiefs is it's not just weapons from a skill position like running back, coaching, and wide receiver. It's just ability to keep your quarterback upright and healthy. Deshaun Watson got sacked 62 times last year. He got sacked 6 times yesterday. It's hard to build a dynasty. It's hard to win a championship if you can't do the fundamental principle of protecting your quarterback. I thought Houston was bad at it yesterday. And Deshaun, even on that touchdown play to Kenny Stills, got drilled on that play. Watson's toughness, some of the throws that he make. Yesterday was the first time that I was willing to entertain the conversation that Deshaun Watson is an elite quarterback in the NFL.
We all expect to see that over the next couple of years, as long as Tom Brady's still playing, that we're going to see AFC Championship matchups like we did last year, Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes. But we're talking about a 42-year-old quarterback, and Brady, at some point, he's got to hang it up. When he does, and we're talking about the next wave of great AFC quarterbacks, they're in pretty good hands. When you talk about Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield, I think we're going to see a lot of important playoff matchups, AFC Championship game matchups between these two guys. But I also think there's a pretty big gap between what Pat is and what Deshaun Watson is. Now, part of that's certainly the situation. If Deshaun Watson got to play in Kansas City with these same weapons, with the same head coach, he'd be a better quarterback. And I don't think Pat would be the MVP, 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, if he played for Bill O'Brien. They'd still both be great, but they're in completely different situations. I think the gap between those two guys is pretty big, but I think the gap's even bigger when you talk about those two guys and whoever's the third best quarterback in the AFC. I'd assume you'd think that's maybe Baker Mayfield, who hasn't shown us a ton. He threw 3 interceptions in week 1. Again, I don't want to make too much out of one football game, but when you talk about guys that aren't just young, but established, think about what Patrick Mahomes did in one full year of being an NFL quarterback. Think about what Deshaun Watson's done in 2+ years of being an NFL quarterback. We're not just talking about good, we're talking about all-time great numbers. So even though Tom Brady's going to be gone in a couple of years, same thing with Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning retired a couple of years ago, those guys represent 15 of the last 16 quarterbacks from the AFC to play in the Super Bowl. Once those guys are gone, somebody else has to step up. And if it's not Patrick Mahomes, it's going to be Deshaun Watson.
It's just really exciting as an NFL fan and to sit and finally kind of look at the league that it's back. When you look at the young quarterbacks that currently exist in the league, I mean, a fourth of the league right now is young, promising quarterbacks, whether it's Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, Mahomes obviously here in Kansas City, Jared Goff in Los Angeles, Deshaun Watson. Like, this is a really exciting transition period where we're getting a little bit of the best of both worlds. I still get to see Drew Brees play at a high level. Brady's still playing at a high level. Ben Roethlisberger still playing at a high level. Phillip Rivers is still playing at a high level. And again, a fourth of the league, a quarter of the league is dominated by these young quarterbacks that you think are going to carry the league forward. Just watching Deshaun Watson and knowing that we in Kansas City were having the conversation of who should they take, Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, man, there was really no bad option. They made the right decision to go get Patrick Mahomes, but I'm telling you, man, yesterday, Deshaun Watson was special, and he made a couple of throws that it's maybe only 4 or 5 quarterbacks in the league that could have made those plays.
In the AFC, you either just got here or you're out the door. Like in the case of Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Patrick Mahomes, those guys could be quarterback in their current franchise for the next 12, 15 years, or you're Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, you're out the door. It's a little bit different in the NFC when you talk about young quarterbacks because there's a few tweeners there. There's guys like Russell Wilson that you could talk about, probably have 4 or 5 good years left. Aaron Rodgers probably has a little bit left in the tank. Same thing with Cam Newton. There's not really that guy in the AFC. Well, there was. His name's Andrew Luck, and he retired. So it's either the young guns or the old guys. And when you talk about the new wave, they're probably not going to be as good as a combination that we just saw. You could argue this was a golden era of quarterbacks when you talk about maybe the two greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game in Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. But the AFC is in pretty good hands when it comes to young signal callers.
I want to get into this really quickly as we transition. Thanks so much for listening. You're listening to The Drive right here on 610 Sports Radio. We asked this big question earlier. Aside from Kelce and Sammy Watkins, what Chiefs pass catcher stands to benefit the most from Tyreek Hill's injury? I'm really high on Damian Williams in a pass-catching sense. So I looked this up today because I was very curious. I think the biggest change we've seen in their offense as we transition away from Kareem Hunt and into the LeSean McCoy and Damian Williams era is Damian Williams is I don't want to call him an elite pass-catching running back. That's Alvin Kamara. That's Christian McCaffrey. But he might be in that next tier. He might be Andy Reid's Deion Lewis. He might be Andy Reid's James White. So I looked this up. We have now seen 8 games of Damian Williams since he has been this team's running back and a focal point of their offense. Mm-hmm. So Kareem Hunt played last year. We saw 5 games at the end of the regular season for Damian Williams. We saw 2 games in the postseason, and we saw the season opener on Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. He has been thrown the ball 41 times. He has caught 36 of those for 272 yards and 5 touchdowns. I really think now with Tyreek Hill and there being that target void and there being a vacancy, that's a big thing in fantasy football for those of you that play. All right, Team X lost this player like Pittsburgh. They lost Antonio Brown. Who's going to step up and fill in those targets? There are targets now available on the Kansas City Chiefs. Who's going to fill them? Obviously, Kelsey's going to get his. Sammy Watkins are going to get his. They're focal points of the offense. But somebody else's production is going to increase now without Tyreek Hill. Who is that player going to be? There's probably 4 players that are in the conversation to do that. DeMarcus Robinson, Mecole Hardman, Damian Williams, and LeSean McCoy. If I had to pick in the passing game, I think it's going to be Damian Williams. I think we can see that he's probably going to be throwing the ball 4 to 6 times, maybe a little bit more on the high end. I really think Andy, especially what we saw in Philadelphia, is really going to try to make Damian Williams a focal point of their offense.
The most important thing is the first thing that you said, that the superstars are going to have to play like superstars, even better than like Travis Kelce last week on Sunday was really good. He's going to have to be better. Sammy Watkins, we're not going to expect you to have 198 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns, but be good. Play like you get paid. Play like a number one wide receiver. It's exactly what he did on Sunday. And as long as he stays healthy, I feel like we say this every single day, there's no reason to think that he can't. You ask who's going to have the biggest impact because of Tyreek Hill going down? It should be Mecole Hardman. There's a reason the Chiefs traded up to get this guy in the second round. It was because they thought Tyreek Hill was going to be off the field. Now, at the time, they thought it was going to be suspension, but it's the same end result. He's not going to be there for the next, let's call it month, month and a half. Mecole Hardman should be the guy to get the opportunities, and here's why I say that. DeMarcus Robinson played on this team last year, right?
He did.
In an offense that threw for 5,000 yards, had the league MVP, and he was only able to catch, wait for it, 288 of those yards. I've seen DeMarcus Robinson. He ain't that good. Even with the weapons around him, the scheme he has, and Andy Reid as his head coach, Mecole Hardman is an unknown commodity. Now, I got a little bit excited on draft day when the Chiefs got him, and I said he's going to go out there and have 700 receiving yards, and he's going to be a decoy, or I'm sorry, more than just a decoy, and he's going to get a lot of Tyreek Hill's targets. I think I should probably recalibrate and say when the season's over with, I'll be happy if he has, let's call it, 400, 450 yards. But that starts on Sunday. There's no reason to think Mecole Hardman won't get targets. He was on the field a lot against the Jaguars. He just didn't get the ball thrown his way.
This is a next man up mentality. This is an opportunity. Like, that's what the younger guys on this team and a guy like DeMarcus Robinson, who's still a younger guy, they got to look at. Again, there is a void. There is a vacancy when it comes to targets and receptions. Hill was getting 10 targets a game, getting 12 targets a game, a focal point of the defense. That's now spread around here. Who's going to receive the benefits of it, and who's going to get the blessing? Because if I was a team defending the Chiefs, especially based on what I saw from Sammy Watkins, hey, Sammy Watkins isn't getting 200 yards against us. We're going to get physical with Sammy Watkins. We're going to try to limit him and hold him under 100 yards. Kelsey's a mismatch problem for any team in the NFL. We'll let Kelsey get his 70, 80 yards. Man, there's a big gap between, so let's say Sammy gets his 80, Kelsey gets his 80. Man, that's 160 yards, and then if Mahomes is throwing for another 140 to get to 300, man, that means somebody else has got to make plays. DeMarcus Robinson, you got to have 4 or 5 catches in this game. Mecole Hardman, you got to have 4 or 5 catches in this game, or I think it's going to Damian Williams. Like, I wouldn't undersell it here. I really think if you look at Andy's track record, what he did with Deuce Staley, what he did with Brian Westbrook, what we've seen him do with various running backs in his time in Philadelphia and here in Kansas City, and looking at it, I can see LeSean McCoy getting 14, 15 carries in this game and Damian Williams getting 6 to 8 targets in the passing game, and that being being the way they try to make up for not having Tyreek Hill.
Hell, you don't have to go all the way back to Deuce Staley. Just go back last year to Kareem Hunt in limited time. Not only did he have 7 rushing touchdowns, he also had 7 receiving touchdowns. So a lot of that is the player. A lot of that is Andy Reid able to scheme that. When you talk about the other weapons, though, that Patrick Mahomes had, this is his chance. Because last year, look, we all knew that Travis Kelce heading in last season was one of the, let's call it, probably 2 best tight ends in the NFL. By the end of the season, there was no question. A lot of that was Kelce. Even more of that was the fact that Patrick Mahomes was his quarterback. That's why he had a career year. Same thing with Tyreek Hill. 600 yards as a rookie, 1,100 yards his second season. Boom. You play with Patrick Mahomes, 1,500 yards. It's the combination of those guys. That's the next step for Patrick Mahomes. We saw you make good players great last year. Now can you make average players? And let's not get it twisted. That's what these guys are. DeMarcus Robinson is probably a below-average player. At this point in his career, zero NFL receptions from Mecole Hardman, a very average NFL player. Now, Pat, do what we think you can do. Make average players good the same way you made good players great last year.
So the Chiefs, just some long story short when it comes to the salary cap, we don't have to get into the minutia of what they did. They created $10.6 million in cap space today. Some of that is twofold. Some of that is obviously the new contract that they just gave to Tyreek Hill. They created a little bit of space to absorb that money because Tyreek Hill got a raise, as you guys already know. Some of it is to create some opportunity for Chris Jones. We'll see what happens with him. Some of it is also for the pending contract extension for Patrick Mahomes. We all understand that Patrick Mahomes is going to get $40 million or something close to it, so they got to have some cap space to absorb that onto their books. They also need some room for a cornerback. Now, I've made a rule on the show. I'm not talking about Patrick Peterson. Once he's off suspension, we can have all the Patrick Peterson conversations you want. But they are not trading for Patrick Peterson while he's under suspension in the NFL, so it's not worth our time in talking about. But if you're going to create $11 million in cap space, you can make any move you want in the NFL. There is not a realistic move that you can make this season in the NFL that you can't with $10.6 million. They can make any move that they need. So whether it's another pass rusher, whether it's a corner, you can probably make one or two moves with $10.6 million. Now, you can't make the home run move, but you can make one or two decent moves. They've really given themselves a lot of great cap flexibility. They obviously took care of a player they wanted to take care of in Tyreek Hill, and they've given themselves a cushion and the opportunity with a rainy day fund of $11 million that they can make any necessary move over the next couple of weeks. Due to the trade deadline.
Which is good because I think they're going to want to. Now, does that player become available? We'll see. But now that they've got the money available, they can make that move. Let's give Brett Veach some credit, man. You could talk about Patrick Mahomes. You could talk about Tyreek Hill. You can talk about all these different players. The Chiefs are probably the most talented team in the entire NFL, and they've still got money available. That doesn't happen. Most of the time, it's one or the other. We spend every penny that we have, and that's why we're so talented. In the case of the Chiefs, not only are they talented and well-coached, and a lot of this because they've got the two best contracts in the entire NFL with Patrick Mahomes and, in theory, Tyreek Hill still being on a rookie contract, but let's give Veach some credit for creating the flexibility where it's already a really talented team, and if they want to or have the capability to add somebody, they certainly can.
They are one move away from playing this thing perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they are. If we think about a majority of the moves that Brett Veach has made so far, and there's still, we agree, the one big move that's out there that they haven't made yet. They signed Tyrann Mathieu. They completely overhauled their linebacker core and defensive line. They re-signed Tyreek Hill. They got through a Chris Jones holdout with no blowback. Think about what happened in Houston with the holdout. Think about what's happening right now with the Chargers with the holdout. Think about what happened with the Cowboys with the holdout. Completely avoided any of that in Kansas City. Chris Jones playing on his rookie contract. And we have not heard him complain about his contract since he showed up in St. Joe. They now have $11 million in cap space, and they have a first-round pick and a second-round pick for next year. They are in prime position to go get any player that they want at the trade deadline. Any player that's available, they can go out there and get him. So whether it's Xavier Howard with the Dolphins who could be available, whether it's Xavier Rhodes in Minnesota, whether it's another corner that we're not even naming at this point, they have put themselves in a position to be able to go make any move that they want. I can't give them a perfect grade right now because Charvarius Ward is playing 100% of their defensive snaps, but they are 3 weeks away from Mo Claiborne, so an upgrade over Charvarius Ward, which would certainly be a plus for this team, and they are 5-6 weeks away from the opportunity of drastically improving their team with the move at corner.
Hell, I thought last week it was Kansas City 1, New England 2, or New England 1, Kansas City 2. And since then, Tyreek Hill's gone down and Antonio Brown signed with the Patriots. So the same way the Patriots made, in theory, an in-season splash of a move, the Chiefs have the financial capability to do that. If you made me rank today based on just those things happening, I'll go New England 1, Kansas City 2. And if you really maybe give your team number 3 in the AFC... Dude, I can tell you it's not. It's not Pittsburgh. They stink. It's not Cleveland. The Chargers are pretty average. It's not Indy without Andrew Luck. Give me a team that lost last night. I was impressed with Houston, even though they lost. As of today, this is ever-changing. I think Houston's the third best team in the AFC.
The answer is pretty clear to me. And if you think it's Houston, that's perfectly fine.
Really? It's clear to you?
No. The answer is I don't know.
Okay.
The answer is nobody right now. The answer is Kansas City, based on their roster, based on their quarterback, based on their coaching situation, they certainly deserve to be in that conversation. The same thing with the New England Patriots, especially with the addition of Antonio Brown. those other five or six teams got to show me something. Indianapolis, you lost your quarterback. Los Angeles, your left tackle isn't there. Your star safety isn't there. The Melvin Gordon situation. Pittsburgh, you just lost by 30 points to the best team in the NFL, in my opinion. Like, the rest of these teams, Baltimore, you beat the Miami Dolphins, who absolutely stink. Cleveland, you had all the hype in the world coming in, got smoked at home by the Tennessee Titans. The answer for the third best team in the AFC is it's week one of the NFL season. Now, you might can make that argument about the Patriots. They went to the Super Bowl last year. You might can make the argument about the Chiefs. They lost on a coin flip in the AFC Championship game. The rest of those teams, you got to prove it. The real answer for who the third best team in the AFC is, we just need a lot more time to figure that out.
We're going to get a chance to figure it out pretty soon, though, if it is the Baltimore Ravens, and I would take that with a grain of salt. Now, they did put up 59 points against the Miami Dolphins, who I don't know if they could beat my alma mater, Blue Valley Northwest, at this point. But Baltimore comes into Arrowhead, first game at Arrowhead this season, next a week from Sunday. So if Baltimore is the third best team, it's going to be a really good test for the Chiefs.
It's going to be a great test for me. If you want to look ahead to it, Baltimore, so this week they play Arizona. Arizona's terrible. After that, next 3 weeks for the Baltimore Ravens, they play Kansas City, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh.
We'll find out if they're any good.
That's an answer to the question. Not 1 week against the Miami Dolphins. That ain't really showing me nothing. Miami stinks. When you play Kansas City, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh in three consecutive weeks, we'll find out how good you are and if you're worthy of being the third best team. I thought that Los Angeles should have lost on Sunday. Let's see a little bit more time. Can they weather the storm without Russell Okung here? Like, we got time to figure out who the third best team and who the challenger is going to be. But right now, there are two challenges for the Chiefs. It's health and keeping your own players healthy. I would say it's also your roster and trying to find another corner. And it's the New England Patriots. I wouldn't be worried about anybody else at this point.
NFL.com put up their top five power rankings today. It's the Chiefs and the Patriots. And then it's not just the rest of the AFC. It's the rest of the NFL. Now, again, probably making too much out of this. We've only seen 1 week of actual football. But the Rams didn't have a very convincing win. They've got them in the top five. NFL.com does. They barely beat the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. New Orleans barely escaped in a game they easily could have lost last night to Houston, and Philly barely took down Washington. If those are their top five teams in the NFL, there's a ton of separation between the Chiefs, the Patriots, and everybody else.
Coming up in just a little bit, so Sunday snap caps are out, and I think they're telling us the direction that the Chiefs want to go at linebacker. We'll get into it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Earlier today, we had Therese Paylor on the show. He thinks this year can be a huge year for Sammy Watkins.
Well, let's say he plays 14 games. He can crack 1,000 yards. He can crack double-digit touchdowns. He can do that. Oh, that's a monster year for number two receiver in offense. That's greatest show on turf type stuff. You know what I mean? So I think that's totally within the realm of possibility, especially with Tyreek Hill potentially, you know, missing a decent chunk of time.
I always hate whenever coaches and players say the sky's the limit. But if you're going to catch for 200 yards and three touchdowns in the first game of the season, sky's kind of the limit. Like, if you think Sammy Watkins is going to catch for 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns, I can't tell you you're wrong based on what we saw in week one. Like, he was one of the five best players in the league on Sunday. Like, I would probably say Lamar Jackson was the quote-unquote player of the week. You can make a strong Sammy Watkins argument, though. He was amazing on Sunday.
I just didn't know that he had that capability. I'm not sure he knew that he had that capability. You talk a lot of smack on him, so do I. The city agrees that this guy's overpaid, but the truth is, he looked a lot like a guy that wasn't on the field Sunday, and the guy I'm talking about is Tyreek Hill. Whether it was the route running, the way that he caught the football, his breakaway speed, cutting on a dime, he told us coming into this season that he felt healthier than he ever has, and he was going to have a career year. I didn't believe him. I thought it was lip service. We're one game in. Maybe the guy was telling the truth.
He looked like the guy that I saw playing for Buffalo.
Or for Clemson.
That destroyed the Chiefs. Do you guys remember when he came here to Kansas City?
Oh, yeah.
And played against the Chiefs, and Tyrod Taylor was his quarterback, and he absolutely shredded the Chiefs secondary. He looks like that guy again. Like, that's what I've always been. So it's been strange to see what he looks like over the last few years. Because he looks like a shell of himself whenever he was injured. And it's very clear he was just never 100%. That included last year. That included the year with the Rams. And it all started in that final year in Buffalo. If he's actually back to 100% and the Chiefs got the receiver that was drafted in the top 10 of the NFL draft ahead of Odell Beckham because he was a star at Clemson, man, you make fun of the whole sky's the limit thing, C-Dot. But it's true. The Chiefs have a number one receiver on their roster that's acting as a number two whenever Tyreek Hill gets back, if that is actually the guy he's going to be this year.
I don't know if this counts as being Debbie Downer. I'm simply sharing the statistic there were five players in the NFL last year that had over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Those players were as follows: DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, Travis Kelce, and Antonio Brown. Those were the only players in the NFL last year to have 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns last season.
Think about how disappointing it would be, though, at this point, if over the next 15 games, let's say he's actually healthy for 16 games, right? Let's just make that assumption, that let's assume health. If he doesn't get 800 yards and 7 touchdowns over the next 15 games, when he's playing in 6 of them probably without Tyreek Hill, and that might be on the low side, that would be a hugely disappointing finish to the year for Sammy Watkins at this point. It would be a disappointment if he doesn't get to those numbers.
My bad. Just to give you a comparison, the player that did that last year was Julian Edelman. He had 850 yards and 6 touchdowns. It would be a disappointment if he has the same year that Julian Edelman had last year, who only played in 12 games.
Heading into Sunday, I was really excited to see Frank Clark. I was really excited to see Tyrann Mathieu. Quite frankly, I don't really remember hearing their names called. Thank you, CBS, for taking my game off my television set, because Frank Clark actually did have an interception at the end of that game. That being said, on the offensive side of the ball, guys, there's two guys that I thought, eh, whatever, heading into this season, maybe they'd be about average at their position. The truth is, after seeing Sammy Watkins, it's time to completely recalibrate your expectations. And how about LeSean McCoy? I wasn't nearly excited enough about a guy that all he did was average 8.1 yards per carry. If LeSean McCoy, and he's not going to do that, and Sammy's not going to do that, but if those guys can be additional weapons to an offense that already was the third best offense in the history of the NFL last year without either of their contributions, watch out.
I think that it is way easier, or it's going to be way easier, for LeSean McCoy to replicate what he did than Sammy Watkins. I mean, LeSean McCoy had a fantastic game. I'm not taking away anything away from him. He had 80 yards rushing. Like, we don't think that LeSean McCoy in this offense can average 80 yards rushing.
Not on 10 carries.
Now, yeah, no, the yards per carry. But, I mean, I'll lock in LeSean McCoy for 80 yards a game. I said, I think that LeSean McCoy is going to be the running back, and I think that Damian Williams is going to be the receiving back. Like, I expect LeSean McCoy to get more carries. Like, I think he gets to 15 this week against the Raiders, and I think they use Damian Williams. I think he gets like 5 rushes, but they try to throw it to him 7 or 8 times.
Okay, I'm getting really excited about Sammy. BK, can you do the math for me? Because if he thinks he's going to go for 80 yards a game on the ground times 16, assuming that LeSean McCoy stays healthy, we're talking about a monster year that nobody expected. I agree with
1,300 you. 1,300 yards.
Yeah, he's not going to get there.
I think he rushes for over 1,000 yards this season. I said that 2 weeks ago. I think LeSean McCoy rushes for over 1,000 yards this season. I think he's the best running back on their team, and I think they're going to use him. Like, think about it. He got 10 carries, rushed for 80 yards, and he just got here 9 days ago. Doesn't really know the offense. Like, I think they're only going to use LeSean McCoy more as the season gets older. So, I mean, we think that 10 carries is going to be it. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he rushes for 100 yards. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if the plan is no Tyreek Hill here. Let's try to run the ball maybe a little bit more than we do. Let's give LeSean McCoy 15 carries. Let's give Damian Williams 5 carries. I'm high on LeSean McCoy.
I just don't think he's going to average 8 yards a carry, whether it's on 5 carries or 20 carries a game. And Damian Williams at some point is going to get sick. I don't even know who the starter of his football team is as of right now. Like, through one game, LeSean McCoy has earned it over Damian Williams. But then again, the Chiefs told us this entire offseason that Damian Williams was a starter. So I expect him, just like you did on Sunday, you can talk about the 8 carries that LeSean McCoy had for 80 yards. That's great. He didn't have the most carries. Damian Williams went out there and had 13, so he was the Chiefs' feature back on Sunday. I think he will be going forward. You might be right, by the end of the season or even before that, LeSean McCoy is going to overtake Damian Williams, but I don't see him having 1,300 yards.
I don't think LeSean McCoy knew the full playbook on Sunday. So the fact that he was out there as much as he was and ended with 10 carries, he had a couple of targets, I think, too. So,
like, he had one target.
11 touches over the course of that game in his first game when he signed on, like, Sunday.
And Tyreek Hill out should give him even more opportunities in theory.
Sure. I just think LeSean McCoy is going to touch the ball probably 15 to 18 times a week on average. And if you're getting that many touches, I mean, you should probably be expected to get closer to that 80 to 90 range when it comes to your yardage output.
Both those guys were eye-opening. It's not even so much the numbers, and the numbers were great. It's the actual eye test. I had no idea.
The LeSean McCoy thing, like, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I just knew it. Like, if you look at LeSean McCoy, last year was the only year that didn't make sense, and it was very easily explainable. So these are, we can go back as far as you want. Let's go to 2013. We agree, a decent enough sample size. 1,600 yards, 1,300 yards. 2015, he had 900 yards, only played in 12 games because he got injured. 1,200 yards, 1,100 yards last year, had the down year with 500 yards. Like, the only year that doesn't make sense is last year.
But that's so easily explainable by the age, and we've seen running backs just drop off a cliff. And that was my concern, was What if this was just the cliff happened? We saw it with Peyton Manning, obviously a different position, but we see this at different positions, and especially at running back, where it's gone and all of a sudden you just can't play the position anymore. That was my fear. But after watching just one game, the eye test tells you that was very clearly not the case for LeSean McCoy. It was just a terrible situation.
I agree. It really was a red or blue pill situation. If you thought LeSean McCoy was washed, you're surprised at what he did on Sunday. If you think LeSean McCoy had something left in the tank, then you're not really that surprised in it. Like, I just look at Buffalo last year. I'm not pretty high on Josh Allen. I'm not really high on their offense. I'm not really high on the situation. That factoring into this team with all the different things that you had, like, I'm not shocked that LeSean McCoy played well, and I think he's only going to continue to get more and more opportunities and be a bigger part of this offense going forward.
The way I see it, it's two additional weapons that I had very little expectations for. Sammy Watkins, I kind of thought he was what he was, an overpaid decoy, and all he did was have 198 yards and three touchdowns. I'm completely recalibrating my expectations. You guys are talking about 1,000 yards and 9 or 10 touchdowns. Give me 1150 and call it, I don't know, 10 or 11 touchdowns a season for Sammy Watkins. And when it comes to LeSean McCoy, I'm that blue pill guy. I thought he was washed. I thought the last year was the real LeSean McCoy, that he hit a wall, kind of like BK was talking about, like LaDainian Tomlinson. Good, great, 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 and then you suck. It happens all the time. I thought that's what happened with LeSean McCoy. If he can go back to LeSean McCoy from the past, especially how good he was with Andy Reid, combine that with Damian Williams, this running game might be as dangerous as this passing game, at least while Tyreek Hill is out.
Let's calm down just a little bit when it comes to that. Text line 69306. Stop talking about Damian Williams like he's a legitimate running back. I've just changed my expectations on Damian Williams. I don't think there's anything wrong with being Deion Lewis. I think Deion Lewis is a very capable running back in the NFL that you would love to have on your team that can serve a very clear purpose. I think he's James White. I think he's Danny Woodhead. Like, I think he is Andy Reid's version of those players. Is he going to be a guy that gets 250 carries for you, 225? No. I think the Chiefs have told you that, and quite frankly, the league has told you about Damian Williams. But can he be a plus for this team and have a pretty defined role and be a significant offensive piece? I think the answer is pretty clearly yes. They throw it to him a lot. He's got 41 targets over the 8 games that he's played for the Chiefs. That's a really high number for a running back that he is a key part of their offense, and I think that's only going to get bigger without Tyreek Hill. Let's take a break, and before we sign off for the night, let's go inside the mind of the machine. We'll do that next. Coming up is The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in just a little bit, we will go inside the mind of the machine. I want to tell you guys a very quick story. So today, Apple had their yearly September event where they announced the new phone. This was the first time that I feel very on the fence about getting the new iPhone. I've gotten the new iPhone every year since they switched over to Verizon. It's been a yearly rite of passage for me. It's something that I really enjoy. I looked at it today, and this was the first time that I started making excuses. Like, do I really need the new phone? Like, this one works just fine. Hasn't given me any problems. What's happening to me, man?
What does this new phone offer that your old phone didn't?
It's just the new iPhone. Then I don't
know. You're a
sucker. I'm not gonna lie to you. I don't really know what's different about this phone other than it's faster and the camera's better.
Every three phones, that's the way to go. So the original iPhone, then you get the 3, then you get the 6, and
I'm not going that long. I'm not going that long. Come on now. I'm not doing that.
I'm not going
once a presidential term and getting a new phone.
I think that's I'm on the 7, but it might be the 6. I don't know.
Yeah, no. I have the most recent one that they have, but I'm looking at it, and then they always get you with those little trade-in deals. I'm like, if you trade it in, it's only $300 extra. I'm like, why am I not gonna go get this phone? Like, this was the first, it used to be, I don't care, just tell me how much it costs. Today was the first day that I looked at it, and I'm like, I don't know. I might not get it day one, and I might just see for myself how long I can hold out before I get it, because it's gonna go on sale in like 2 months. They always do.
You're a sucker.
They always go on sale. I'd much rather do that than wait 4 years until getting a new phone. That sounds absolutely awful with the iPhone 6. Let's go inside the mind of the machine.
All right, see it out on the schedule this Monday night. Monday, the Browns play the Jets. Those are a couple of your favorite teams. who you got and who needs it more.
Man, I can't. I'm just digesting this Monday night football game. I got to be looking ahead to next week's Monday
night
football.
Your teams are playing. Okay, who needs it more?
Goodness gracious.
On the real, Browns or the Jets?
The Browns need it more. The Browns will fall apart if they lose. Next week's storyline will be that the Browns are falling apart if they lose on Monday.
That's a borderline elimination game, though.
No, it's not borderline. One of those two teams. It is an elimination game. So right now they're doing this stat. I'm sorry to cut you off, BK. So teams that start 0-2 since the playoff expanded, 30 made the playoffs, 208 missed the playoffs. Whoever loses on Monday, the number strongly suggests you are not making the playoffs.
Speaking of Browns, Antonio Brown, Bill Belichick made a comparison with his new wide receiver Antonio Brown to the great Randy Moss. Any comparison between what Antonio Brown might do his first year in New England and what Randy Moss did? By the way, Randy Moss had, wait for it, 23 touchdown catches. 23 his first year as a Patriot.
No, there's no compare. The only comparison is that they were malcontents or deemed to be malcontents.
True.
Like, Randy Moss with the Patriots was the greatest wide receiver in the history of the NFL. I'm not saying he is the greatest wide receiver in the history of
that
the NFL.
That year he was.
I'm saying is when he played with the Patriots and Tom Brady, he was the best wide receiver in the history of the NFL. I don't think that's going to be the case with Antonio Brown. Is he going to be good in New England? Probably. Is he going to be Randy Moss with New England? Probably not.
That 2007 Patriots team changed football. Like, they legitimately changed the way that football was played because of how amazing they were that year. Randy Moss and Wes Welker were incredible. Wes Welker finished that year with 115 receptions for 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns. And he was the second best receiver on the team by a wide margin. That team was unbelievable. That we're going to look back on that forever as one of the best teams that we've ever seen. No, Antonio Brown is not going to match what Randy Moss did because nobody's going to match what Randy Moss did that year.
Well, speaking of great wide receivers, Odell Beckham wore a, let's call it, $250,000 watch in the game on Sunday.
Do you know what kind of watch that it is?
Let me guess. That was probably a Fossil watch.
It is a Richard Mille is the name of it.
Never heard of you. Richard Mille, you say?
Should listen to more rap songs. They talk about it all the time. That's like the new. You can always tell what watches are hot in rap songs. Like last year, it was those.
Hang on, you gotta answer that question. I
that was a funny quote.
BK,
and
that
I just rolled right through it.
He wanted to know if that's what the song "A Millie" is about by Lil Wayne.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Not what a Millie is about.
I'm aware. I thought it was gonna be a good one-liner, and see, I just rolled right through.
I didn't hear it. No, so that's my bad. No, I didn't hear.
Pay attention to this man. He's saying funny things across the glass.
No, I didn't hear your joke.
That's my favorite Lil Wayne song, by the way.
In rap songs, you can always tell what new hot watch is out. Last year, it was those Patek Philippe's. That was like the hot watch. Then everybody wanted a Rolex and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, now it's Richard Mille's.
Yeah, you'll see me rocking a Rolex. No, you won't. $300,000 watch. Terrible idea. Good idea. And what's the most expensive accessory that you've ever wore? Back in high school, I don't know why I did it. I'm not proud of this. I used to wear my grandpa's gold pinky ring. So I wore a pinky ring in high school.
That's on brand.
Yeah.
Do shoes count? Because I've never been much of a jewelry guy. Like, that's never really done a whole lot for me. I've always like really wanted a really nice chain, but once I went to the jewelry store and found out how much they cost, I wasn't that interested in getting a new chain.
I also wore a chain in high school with the No Limit tank on it, believe it or not.
Yeah, also on brand.
I would want like real jewelry. I don't want no middle of the mall jewelry. Like, that just doesn't really do much for me.
Definitely from the mall. The old Great Plains, the mall, the Great Mall, yeah, whatever that was called in Olathe.
Everybody got the little Figaro chain from the middle of the mall. Shoes, I got Kanye's first Nike shoe. That was like $325, I think they were. The Odell Beckham thing it's stupid for a couple of fronts. Number one, why can you wear a necklace during a game? Why can you wear earrings during a game, but you can't wear a watch during a game? Like, just say you can't wear jewelry during the game and that be the rule. So that part to me is kind of silly. I do agree with Odell Beckham that if the watch costs $20, he wouldn't be talking about it. Part of it is I can't believe Odell Beckham is wearing this $300,000 watch while playing the game. And if you're Odell Beckham, if you're not getting paid to wear the watch, this is dumb. Now, if they're paying you and they're saying, hey, we'll give you $1 million and we'll eat the fine because it's worth it for the advertising, then cool, keep wearing the watch. And, you know, as long as the outcome is income. But this whole back and forth he's going to have is very stupid. Focus on winning football games. That was hard enough for you guys in week one.
Dude's wearing a watch. Before we get out of here, the Broncos lost last night to the Raiders. Are the Raiders actually or the Broncos just that bad?
I mean, the answer can be both of them. I mean, I think the Oakland Raiders – I was shocked how much they rallied around not having Antonio Brown. And Joe Flacco might be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. He might be. I think the answer is Jameis Winston because he stinks. But the answer might be Joe Flacco. He might be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. You can't win with that guy. Like, you cannot win if Joe Flacco is your quarterback.
Neither one of them are a Gardner Minshew, that's for sure.
I'd rather have Gardner Minshew than have both of those guys as my starting quarterback. Thanks so much for listening. Check out the podcast page. I think it's still up. I don't know at this point, to be complete. It is up. Radio.com back. Thriving out here.
Well, 610sports.com.
Out here thriving, my guy. Thanks so much for listening. It is The Drive.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.